You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the Center Steer Podcast, the only Land Rover podcast on the planet. This is show number 41 for August 2016. This is a podcast by, for, and about Land Rover owners. Please visit our website, centersteer.com, to listen to previous shows and for show notes where we have links to stories discussed in today's show. We are part of the 4x4 Radio Network, and I invite you to check out those shows, and they are 4x4 related at 4x4, that's 4x4radionetwork.com. Thank you for your comments, follows, likes on Facebook, Twitter, and email. And a special thanks to Jack Rivas for his guest suggestion. We are working on it. Emails have been sent. And I think even Dave is going to try to help us out to get him on the show. Not Jack, of course, but...
Yes, Eric Brown.
Eric Brown, thank you.
Trailhead 4x4.
And that was Dave. I'm your host, John Costage. Joining me in the studio in Western Pennsylvania on a... outrageously warm and hot day is. We'll start with Dave because you already heard Dave.
Hey, how's it going out there?
What are you driving? What'd you drive today, Dave?
Today it was the Ram again.
The Great Pumpkin.
Yes.
and also joining us is.
I'm Harold.
And Harold,
as usual.
As usual. Harold has a outstanding and spectacular M word coming up. I encourage you to listen to it. It is more Jag focused than it is Land Rover focused. It was we already heard it because we already recorded it, but it was a good one. I like that. The usual contributor from the Green Mountain State, Morgan, is off attending to his new Discovery 2. Will not be joining us on the show today.
And his girlfriend, who's having yet another birthday this year.
That's true. We could probably say that because she's not going to listen to the show. But Morgan did get a D2, and hopefully that'll allow him to better work on his...
A functioning rover.
A functioning rover.
To use in the process of rebuilding his other one.
Yes, I think he sold the Volvo, didn't he? That was my impression. I think he sold the Volvo and picked up a D2.
Oh, the crazy things.
Really?
Crazy things you do when you quit your job.
too funny.
He and I will have to have an extended conversation here.
Well, and we were hoping to have him. He was going to join us in the show. We were going to have that extended conversation, but I think it's going to have to wait till next month. But we had some email exchange about it this week in preparation for the show.
Well, and you guys remember how I started.
Indeed.
I'm just going to, you know, maybe a little bit of a lift and... Some AT tires.
Famous last words.
You know, today...
Everyone starts that way. I'm just going to get this thing. I'm not going to do much to it. I'm just going to... No.
Next thing you know, I'm holding up a trophy for Rovers on the Rock.
$60,000 later.
You know, speaking of buying a disco really quickly, today is Bill's birthday. He's 75 years old.
Yeah, Disco Bill.
Disco Bill.
Mm-hmm. And I always enjoyed that story where Bill went to Mar with us 1 year. And
never having set ass in Rover before.
Indeed. And within, a week, he had a disco in his driveway.
6 days.
So happy birthday to Disco Bill, as we like to call him here. He's part of our local Land Rover Club. And happy birthday, Bill. Our guest this month is Emily Miller with the Rebel Rally. The rally is the first women's off-road navigation rally in the United States, and so she'll give us a good overview of the rally. Also this month, on some little bit of administrative news, we started a Patreon account. Patreon is a simple way for you to support the podcast. It'll help to keep the podcast going and also encourage us to do more. Enjoy doing the podcast out of the goodness of our hearts and volunteering our time.
Yeah, we certainly don't do it for the big paycheck.
There is absolutely no big paycheck, but maybe we'll get a little bit of paycheck.
This is the reason for the Patreon, I do believe.
Yes, it is. Yeah, help to pay for some of the bandwidth, help pay for... I'd like to get some stickers to give those out and...
Reduce the bleeding from our own pockets.
Indeed, and maybe get a new microphone, because one of the microphones we have here is not the best, and maybe get some new microphones down the road.
My arm's getting tired of turning the crank all show long.
And I also like to get one of those.
I need more athletic support.
I do not want to
know about you and athletic supporters, Dave.
Cafe Press, you can get a thong, I think, with the logo, but I don't authorize that.
I'll send pictures.
I would. No.
Please don't.
Please don't, Dave. I'd also like to get one of those DAT recorders so that we could...
Although for special Patreon contributors, if they really want to contribute at a certain level, Dave might send them pictures like that as their reward.
As I was saying, I'd like to get one of those DAT recorders that will independently record the podcast, because sometime, you know, we will have a failure of the main recorder. And
because that's never happened before, that you never know.
But you never know. It will, and it will happen.
We might just decide to have a really excellent and irreplaceable show from somewhere in England, for instance, and lose it entirely.
And, yes.
So a backup device would be an excellent thing to have.
So check out our Patreon account, which is Patreon/CenterSteer, and I'll spell that out for you. Of course, we'll have a link in the show for you and on the webpage, but it's patreon.com/CenterSteer, C-E-N-T-R-E, steer. All the details are there, and you can make a monthly contribution starting at $1 and working your way up. If you want to give more than what we have as the rewards, give me contact. Be happy to entertain the idea. We have some rewards out there. I think they're pretty cool. And it'll help you to show some additional support for the show and help keep this thing going. First up is the news. We're going to start with some new model discussion. It's been August, seems to be a typically kind of a light month for news, so some of these are going to be probably maybe some short stories. But then again, you know, we like to talk, and we always think
never a short story on this podcast.
We think we're going to have a short podcast. The next thing you know, 3 hours later.
Oh yeah, well, we won't spend too long on that.
No, no. So the Range Rover Evoque convertible is absurd and strangely appealing. This is a review out of Autoblog. I just thought that was kind of an interesting read.
It's a catchy headline, if nothing else.
It is. They basically say it's kind of quirky, but it works. The thing that I took out of this out of the article is that you can fit 4 normal human beings in the vehicle. So there seems to be plenty of space in the rear to fit a normal human being.
Well, one would expect to fit 4 comfortably in a 5-seater.
Yes, except it's a convertible 5-seater, which usually causes to be have reduced.
Right, but there ought to be room for at least 4, given that they have the balls to call it 5.
Well, it's all marketing, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they do. So check that article out. It's kind of interesting. It's a nice little read. They generally liked it. It was, again, kind of quirky. Of course, it's absurdly expensive for what you're getting. But
certainly for what you get. It's overpriced, but it's a Range Rover.
But it's a Range Rover. The base model starts at $52,000 American, which is $5,400 more than the Evoque Coupe. The HSE model that they drove in this one had an additional $5,000 worth of active safety features tacked on, the heads-up display, park assist, adaptive cruise control, and it looks like they said it ended up being $64,000 American. So, yeah, there you go.
And for that money, you could buy the remaining first-gen Freelanders that are still drivable and
yes,
have a little bit of money left over for gas.
Yes, exactly.
No.
If you'd want to.
Well, don't
forget. I mean, if you want quirky and absurd, that's another way to do it.
And the Freelander took regular gas. It didn't take premium gas.
Yes, because that was all they were shooting for.
Fuel economy.
Yes.
There's no telling what you could put in the rear of your Freelander.
Anything you want. As long as you don't care what happens to it.
The 2017 Range Rover Sport trains a camera on trailers. So this was from roadshow.com, which is one of the CNET pages. They talk about, basically it's all about the tech that's on board the new Range Rover that's coming up. There's an advanced tow assist, which steers the vehicle as the driver uses a rotary knob to tell the car what direction the attached trailer needs to move. It will alert the driver if a jackknife is imminent. There's low traction launch, helps driver make a getaway from a standstill. Ooh. On surfaces with low coefficient of friction by
low
controlling
traction launch. That yes, sounds like so much fun.
Doesn't it? Isn't that why you bought that?
I've done that many times, but it tends to shorten the life of the tires.
Maybe
a different kind of low traction launch from what they're talking about.
I suspect that it controls the torque output, so it probably doesn't put as much power down.
I believe they're talking about a gripped controlled launch on a low traction surface. Mm.
I'm just stumbling through the whole idea of a rotary controlled.
I'm guessing the
is this leftovers from the BMW era?
It might be, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just struggling with the rotary controlled knob to tell where the trailer needs to go. Don't you call that the steering wheel?
But if you're backing up, it's the opposite of the way.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you
actually,
do that
if you're smart enough, you grab it at the bottom of the wheel, and then it's the same direction.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
But that's just tricks of the trade there.
Exactly, and a lot of people that probably use this trailer or use trailers probably don't do that often.
But
enough to know
that's actually a poor substitute for proper training on how to handle a trailer, which should be a requirement. If you're going to have a trailer, you should learn all of the things, and you should
yes,
learn to do it without all the electronic aids.
Indeed. The All-Terrain Info Center, it's like a 10-point 2-inch touchscreen. They've got the cameras all around to help navigate tricky sections. You can you got the remote app that you can do to check data, unlock the engine, adjust the HVAC, all the kind of stuff. When you put all that together, this is the other interesting ones there. They have the standard safety equipment includes rear parking sensor, lane departure warning, and autonomous emergency braking. For the driver pack, this is my favorite part of this, is that there's the standard stuff, there's the driver pack, there's the driver pro pack, which then, so if you want the really cool stuff, then you're gonna pay for it. The driver pack adds blind spot monitor, traffic sign recognition, and a new speed limiter that holds your speed based on the traffic sign. The Pro Pack, adaptive cruise control, active blind spot assist, and lane keep assist.
I think that speed thing that's tied to the road signs would be cool if you could use that rotary knob to turn up the margin.
Plus five.
How much more over the posted limit you actually want to go so you don't get run over by all the traffic.
All that together.
Or is that tied to the nav system to automatically adjust for the region you're in?
I don't know.
Because around here it's about 10 over in many places, but you go out to California and it's like 30 over.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's got to be a way you can turn it on or turn it off or just let you know what's happening. Waze does that now. Waze will tell me if I'm, in a 25-mile speed limit, and it'll flash up. And I go, that's nice. I want to know how fast I'm going more so than...
See, I want to link it all into something like Waze, where it then also tells me where all the police are.
Waze does that.
Oh, no. I mean into the...
Oh, in a car.
Into the car.
Yeah.
Of course, I just do it the old way. I just stay even with all the cars around me and don't worry about what the actual number is.
Right.
Yeah. Either that or I drive a series truck where you just put a brick on the floor and...
just go.
That's
right. That's exactly...
Go as fast as you can. It doesn't matter. Because everybody's going faster.
Right.
All that for 2017 Range Rover Sport, which will go on sale later this year. $65,000 American. Get your checkbooks out. Next, this was a long-term test review of the Disco Sport from Autocar in the UK. And basically, this article was not less about the car than about the fact that it was a diesel, and they had to fill it up with AdBlue, which is that urea and distilled water mixture, to help keep the exhaust emissions clean. And they went on and on about how they had the light would come on, and I guess if you let it run too long without filling it up, it won't even start the engine. Like it won't let you turn it on. But eventually they put in, it looks like about 4.5 liters into it. And each liter bottle, which is one of these that you spin on to the filler, they're 10 pounds a pop.
Wow.
Sounds like somebody's doing some serious profit taking there.
Yeah, that's way overpriced.
Oh, absolutely.
For the convenience of having a spin-on cartridge, just buy the gallon jug and just pour it in.
Yep.
Well,
how hard is that?
I mean, I can tell you, so my diesel truck that I use to tow my Disco to these events, I'll go through 2.5 gallons of that in about 500 miles.
Oh, yeah?
At least in this part of the country. And it's $10 for 2.5 gallons.
So you fill it up with 25 gallons of diesel and 2.5 gallons of exhaust fluid.
Yeah, and there are places that you pull into.
Oh, yeah, it's in the pump.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's on the truck stops. It's on the big marquee sign out on the road, the price of their DEF.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's by far the cheapest place because that's $1.39 a gallon.
You
want
to just pump it directly, not pay for the jug.
Oh, sure.
That you're just going to throw away in 5 minutes anyway.
Yeah, the convenience, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's out there. Next, a little more newsy, JLR to drop supercharged V8 for turbocharged BMW engines. The Jag 5.0-liter supercharged V8 is going away, and they are going to pull in BMWs. Apparently the thought here is it would be cheaper to use BMW's already designed engine instead of redesigning engines from the ground up, and that JLR doesn't have as much money for that, whereas BMW's already invested the money. This will help reduce BMW's costs and keep JLR's costs low.
And I think BMW is really trying to undercut the competition, if you will. They sell engines to a lot of companies. I think they've probably positioned them with a really sexy price so that to discourage JLR from coming up with their own engine that might be better than BMW's in the first place, it gives BMW better bragging rights.
Are they going to drop that? So are we saying they're going to drop them from the Jags, too? Just the Rovers?
Well, but if they're not going to develop new engines for the Rover, that's less incentive for them economically to develop new engines for the Jags.
Sure.
Because
sure.
the whole point of the combined companies right. is that they've spread their development costs for their power plants across both divisions. And if one of them's not going to use it, the other one probably can't afford to.
Yeah, and this is just the V8, by the way, because they already have the Ingenium stuff going with the V6s and the and the 4s.
Especially given that the Jag doesn't sell as many units as Land Rover to begin with.
Yeah, here especially. Yeah. So that's coming, or not coming, I suppose, depending on how you look at it. So I guess a V8-designed JLR engine is going away. And back to the days when BMW and Land Rover were owned. What was that?
The Dark Ages.
The Dark Ages, when they borrowed / stole Range Rover so they could build the X5. Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, they ransacked the company like a horde of Huns.
Mm-hmm.
My mom likes her X5, though.
That's nice for her.
Good for her.
Someday we'll sit her down and teach her some things.
I keep trying to talk her into a Range Rover.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Next up, JLR will try to take on Tesla. So apparently they want to, they're take on Tesla, and they're working on two all-electric Jaguars to challenge the Model S and the Model X. And
really smart, they would electrify the Freelander and put solar panels on the roof, because that's the name, the Freelander.
No, nice.
How could they not use that opportunity?
I'm sure it doesn't fit into the brand strategy.
Someone needs a good slap upside the head. That's all I can say.
Along those lines, JLR may team up with Ford and BMW for an electric battery plant. As you know, Tesla has built its own lithium-ion battery factory, and apparently to stretch resources and costs, these companies are thinking about coming together to build common batteries. So I guess that kind of ties in together with the previous story there. So as JLR is developing these electric cars, and I think one of them might be the F-Pace, looks like potentially dubbed the I-Pace or L-Pace, depending on, I can't tell that font. So
L for loser?
All electric isn't necessarily a bad thing. It has some coolness to it. If you get the...
It could be quick.
Very quick. Well, yeah. the new battery upgrade to the Model S, I think for Tesla is the world's fastest production car, like 3.2 seconds.
Well, that's not fast. That's quick. But acceleration has always been the advantage of the electric vehicle because they have full torque at zero RPM. There's no letting the clutch out. There's no getting it rolling. You just punch it and you're gone.
You go. Yeah. So, possibly good things coming. At least in the electric side of it. A little more on the tech side. I think we mentioned this before, but just it came up an official story that JLR goes all in with Portland-based tech operations. They are rolling out a new facility, adding new jobs, and increasing the size of its tech startup incubator in Portland, Oregon. JLR, they're going to hire, I think, 20 or 30 people, if I remember read the article right. And not sure what they're going to do, but hey, it's a tech incubator. Where startups work alongside the automaker to develop new infotainment tech, which, from what I understand, they need help on. Their infotainment system.
Well, and new vehicles are expected to be rolling tech platforms these days, so you really kind of have to have technology incubators in your corporate plan, otherwise you won't keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yes, as many of our listeners know, we're near the Pittsburgh area, and Uber announced that very soon, if they don't already have it, they're going to have... self-driving taxis, effectively rolling the streets of downtown Pittsburgh.
They've been spotted.
And they've definitely been spotted. I've seen those. In fact, the mayor of Pittsburgh was the first one to get the ride in one of those. So
they need to have a robotic driver at the wheel who spins his head all the way around. Hi there. Welcome to Johnny Cab.
You beat me to it. I was going to say that. Welcome to Johnny Cab.
Well, where can I take you tonight?
The only problem is you have to do it in a Pittsburgh accent. Which I can't
Where can I take ins tonight?
Where can I take ins tonight? Where are you want to going at?
Let's go downtown.
Downtown? Are you going to Southside? I apologize for that podcast content. So that was a little bit of Pittsburghese. Wow, I didn't think we'd ever go there on the show. Next up in the news, is we're going to talk about branding and one of our favorite designers. I know we say a lot of negative things about Mr. McGovern.
He makes it easy.
But I thought this was really interesting. I saw this article, not even an article. It's the apparently it's the design firm that helped Land Rover to position itself. Is called Brand Union. And on their website, brandunion.com, they have a story or a what would you call that? I guess a story called How Do You Revitalize a Legendary British Brand? And they talk about, in a nutshell, what they were told to do, which was that they wanted to position themselves as a premium SUV brand of choice. And then they have a section here on what we did. And a lot of the things that you read here, I don't know if we'll go over them all or not, but we've seen these things happen. We've talked about how Land Rover does great marketing, and I think this all comes from this Brand Union and the things that they did. They came up with Above and Beyond, that tagline, and they it says here that firstly, I should read what they said here. Firstly, we simplified Land Rover's brand strategy, which had become muddled by too many models, guidelines, and layers of complexity. They explored the original DNA of the company and what was then required to ensure the brand remained relevant in the future and across different customer types and markets. They injected new meaning into Above and Beyond, and they analyzed the entire customer journey, uncovered many aspects of the current Land Rover experience that were not living up to the Above and Beyond promise. And we set about redesigning the visual and verbal identities of Land Rover so that every customer interaction with the brand lived up to the expectations set by the brand promise. We endowed the brand with the same craftsmanship of its products and created a system that established greater consistency across communication channels and markets. This ensured that across the globe, Land Rover felt like a truly British premium brand. And we've seen that. You know, they changed the logo. They said it was all that had kind of gotten stale and old, and then they kind of refreshed the logo. That's one item, I guess, that we've seen. We've seen the things they've done with that taxi they had, that Defender taxi. They got that designer Paul Smith involved with one of the with painting one of the Defenders. So they've done some really neat, interesting, weird.
Although he didn't accomplish anything I couldn't have done with a pile of miscellaneously colored panels.
Indeed, but you're not Paul Smith.
I'm not getting paid billions of dollars to come up with something that anybody who's trying to keep a used one on the road has already done for himself.
I say, didn't Bruce do that with a disco?
We've all done it, Dave.
My discos are all the same color.
Well, you're one of those types that's able to buy parts cars in the same color as your original truck.
Yeah, this is true.
But so when you look at this, you see a lot of things they talked about there. You've seen how they have a nice organized brand strategy. They've done great marketing. You know, they had these reveals of the new models are always a spectacular thing that happens, and they take a long approach to revealing a new model when it comes out. So you get the spy shots, you get the information, then you get the reveal, and then you get the journalists to come out, and they take people to Iceland to test the vehicle out, and as they did with the Disco Sport. So I think this all ties in with this Brand Union. Apparently,
they're really doing
this
showmanship well on this.
Yeah, and I think it shows that vehicle sales are up in the United States and in other places. I think it is positioned as a premium brand, certainly. And then that's the other thing I guess to point out is you've seen this move to push to moving up the brand all the time. You know, Range Rover's become more and more premium, as we'll see in our next discussion, the next article here. They say yes, we are moving Range Rover up as a more of a premium, luxurious brand,
which was its original intent. So if you're really focused on examining the original DNA, as they say, then that's the direction you have to go.
Which also takes us to if you're examining the original DNA and we look at the series Defender, hopefully that being a kind of utilitarian, more of a kind of standard vehicle, if that makes some sense, not luxurious, but yet capable. Hopefully that continues with the new Defender too. And they think of that DNA and not just move Defender and make it like all the other trucks that are out there and just slap a Defender name on it.
You'll have to keep a leash around Clueless Jerry if you want that to happen.
Speaking of
our best friend,
I don't think Jerry would call us his best friend.
It's not mine.
Not a big fan. Automotive News, and this kind of relates very well to the previous story on Brand Union. Automotive News interviewed Mr. McGovern, who is the chief Land Rover designer,
AKA the Butcher of Birmingham.
And So I'll read a couple of these things. I think they're interesting, and we'll talk about them accordingly. Because I think they're very, very interesting to the discussion of the brand. So the question first was, have you noticed that Ford's latest SUVs seem to have the same design elements, headlights, taillights, grills, that look to be influenced by Land Rover? And Jerry's answer was, when we were partners, they were always very respectful of Land Rover's design. And, yeah, there's more to read there, but that's basically what it boils down to. They're like, yeah, we know it's happening, but that's that.
The question is, who copied who?
The impression I get...
My takeaway is that all of Jerry's new Rover designs look like Ford's.
Yeah, looking at the new Discovery 5, I mean, it looks like a stretched version of the Exploder.
Explorer, by the way, would be the
actual.
For those who
give it a couple of years in the aftermarket and you'll understand.
Well, not everybody is familiar with the Ford Explorer.
Not everyone's had the experience yet.
But if you read this, his answer, it's the opposite. It almost sounds like, oh, Land Rover came up with designs and everybody else is copying, imitating. That's at least the takeaway I had from that. Although they said that...
Yeah, it does kind of sound like...
Copying was okay.
Yeah, copying's okay, and that's justifying the fact that he's copied from Ford for everything he's
done. Did he work for Ford? Didn't we find that out one time? Did he work for Ford? Well, he was around when Ford owned JLR, right?
Yeah, he was at Land Rover, I think, during the Ford tenure, and he's buddies with all those guys. I don't know if he actually worked there or not, but it sure looks like he used to.
Yeah, I mean, the Ford Explorer especially. I mean,
kind of looked like he used to work at – I mean, I'm probably wrong about this, but it sure looks like he worked at Ford, and just when he left, he stuffed his portfolio full of their sketches.
I thought I saw that somewhere listed that he actually had worked for Ford during that period. Next question. When you realize that other companies are influenced by your work, that's the question, does it put pressure on you to move designs along further? And he says no. He doesn't think about it.
Of course not, because he likes to make his stuff look like everybody else anyway.
And he talks about Land Rover has a DNA which emanates from a rich heritage and has all those ingredients.
And yet,
reading this one, I'm going to read a little more because I think it's interesting. And this, so he's the question is, do you realize other companies are influenced by your work? And he's saying no. And he goes on to explain that Land Rover has its own DNA, has its own design aesthetic. There's always going to be some resemblances. A car is a car. At the end of the day, it's got to have lamps, doors, windscreens, and people will draw their comparisons. But then he says, at the last answer to this, which to me I think contradicts everything he's just said, at least in my mind, quote, the most important thing is to try and do something that is relevant to the brand but is truly distinctive and compelling, unquote.
Something he has never done.
And I don't see the distinctive and compelling.
He talks about understanding the DNA, but he doesn't. He talks about doing something distinctive, and he doesn't.
I think the very first ones they came out with were distinctive, like the LRX, which became the Evoque.
Well, yeah, all the concept stuff was still good. But then he got his mitts on it and watered it down for production.
And they all look alike now. You look at the whole range, except for maybe the big Range Rover still looks.
Well, that's his idea of keeping common DNA and brand identity to make them all look the same.
I think that's probably
the
right
answer. Mind you, for 68 years, we did fine without doing that.
I absolutely agree with you. Mm-hmm.
I suspect what he's looking at is the bottom line at this point. He doesn't care.
Well, he doesn't care. He doesn't get it.
He gets incentives and stock, and he's compensated based on sales. And if sees Ford selling a lot of SUVs, maybe Land Rovers are going to start looking like Fords. And as long as he doesn't really give a damn about Land Rover beyond that, and it,
well, he may as well be honest about it if that's what he's doing, though.
Yeah.
Instead, he's just lying to us, talking about distinctive DNA and distinctive styling and understanding these things when clearly he doesn't care.
And we didn't see that in that LR100 concept, which was the
DC100.
Excuse me. Thank you. DC100, which was
what I call the Pretender.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly did not have I didn't see DNA there.
Actually, it looks like he stole a lot from the Toyota FJ.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That's true.
Interesting. Yeah.
Not the cool original one, the late plastic one.
Right. Yes, that they no longer produce. As a side note. Moving on, another question. Does the upcoming new version of the Discovery give Land Rover an opportunity to move Range Rover further up market, perhaps to compete with the Bentley Bettiaga? Did I say that right? Is it Bentayga? Bentayga?
I think it's Bentayga.
Bentayga, yeah, probably. I used my Pittsburghese on that one. His answer was, I think the Range Rover has in no way reached its ceilings in terms of price. As we make these discos and disco sports more premium, it's incumbent upon us to make the Range Rover even more luxurious. And that's what they're focused on.
Finally, something that gives a hint to the original intent and DNA of the product. The Range Rover was always intended to be premium and well upscale of the Land Rover.
And then following on, another question. If the Range Rover and Discovery also move up market, can some vehicles in the next Defender family move into the Discovery niche? And his answer, I think it potentially might take some Discovery diehards to say, I like the ruggedness of that. It's not designed. It's not styled. I think maybe the next Defender might appeal to those types of people. I have that's the end of his statement. I have no idea what that means.
I think he's just flat wrong on that. I know a lot of Discovery people who love the original Defender and would love to have one if they could.
True.
Yeah, me.
And are anxiously awaiting to see what the new one is and if it's anything any good.
Yeah.
Oh, and looks good, too.
Well, and if they're bumping the discos up into that more premium group, that leaves a hole in the lineup.
Yeah, the question is whether they'll fill that properly at the utility low-end scale or whether they'll just be slightly less upscale than the disco, which I don't think really accomplishes what they should be doing.
Yeah.
So
it's a chance to widen their spectrum if they do it right.
Right. But don't forget, they're still pretty small. Yeah, it's a small company. It's not that large. They, you know, their number of vehicles, comparative to, especially in the United States, is still a relatively small percentage. So just, you know, while they have a lot of money and they do a lot of good things well and are selling well, relatively speaking, they're not Ford. They're not they're not General Motors by any stretch. I don't think they're going to answer that question, though, I don't think they're going to worry about that niche. I don't think they're going to worry about that area, that introductory SUV market.
Well, they probably won't, and they
well, they're conceding it because they don't think that they can compete. And the
thing, possible.
The thing is that, you know, you're looking at a market where you're competing against the Jeep Wrangler and, you know, something as maybe as fancy as a Ford Explorer.
Yeah,
but
and I think you could compete with that if you really, really put your mind to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. But
and I think, you know, on the side of that, as I understand it, Mr. Tata, the owner of the company, ultimately, is a big fan of the original Defender, and he's been the impetus behind keeping the brand that model alive and making the comeback to the U.S. market. And I think, you know, it would help if he could sort of step up and say, hey, guys, let's get the utility segment covered.
Well, certainly, again, we can only hope. There's at least some potential positive there.
Either that or just start reproducing the old series truck tooling like Mahindra's doing with the old CJ2s.
Mm-hmm. So check out that article. If you have any comments or thoughts on what we've talked about here, feel free to let us know. We'll listen to them. We may or may not agree with you, but we'll listen to them.
Yeah, right. You are entitled to your opinion, no matter how wrong it might be.
Indeed. So that's the news for this month. It was a kind of a slow month, as August in the summer typically is, as we get into the car new model debut season. I'm sure we'll be more news. We're back with the rest of the podcast after we listen to the M Word. And the M Word is pretty interesting this month. We've already heard it. So hopefully you'll listen in. Harold, any little background on where this one came from?
Well, I do explain it in the article, but it comes from a comment we made on a few episodes ago on the podcast. So go listen to your back episodes, people.
And now, the M Word.
During a recent episode of this podcast, I made some remarks about Jaguar's E-Type, comparing its looks with its predecessor, the XKSS, and a common shoebox. Upon reflection, I feel like I should clarify my position, as I in no way meant to disparage either car, as they are both amazing in their own ways. But first, allow me a few minutes to explain how they both came to be. Our story begins in the waning days of World War II. The company originally known as the Swallow Sidecar Company was reorganized in the 1930s, forming SS Cars Limited. During the war, it became apparent that the SS name had become politically incorrect in a country at war with Nazi Germany. so the name was changed to Jaguar Cars Limited. In order to hit the ground running after the war, the chairman, Sir William Lyons, had begun making plans with his engineers while on fire watch at the factory during German bombing raids. These plans included new car models and a new engine design. Prior to the war, the company had been buying its engines from the Standard Motor Company, but Lyons felt that the future success depended upon Jaguar developing their own engines. The goal was to produce a high-performance engine that would stay ahead of its competition for many years. After evaluating and testing several designs, the final prototype selected was known as the XK. It was a 3.4-liter six-cylinder engine with a cross-flow cylinder head, dual overhead camshafts, and hemispherical combustion chambers. The displacement would change over the years, but the basic engine design remained mostly unchanged and in production for over 40 years. The XK engine was first shown at the 1948 London Motor Show in a prototype roadster known as the XK120. It was really intended to just be a test bed and a rolling display case for the new engine, but the XK120 was such an immediate crowd pleaser that Lyons ordered it into production. In 1949, the first production XK120 was delivered to the legendary man's man and occasional movie actor, Clark Gable. The 120 in its name referred to its 120-mile-per-hour top speed, making it the fastest production car of its time. Subsequent testing showed this to be a conservative estimate, and with tuning and modifications, the XK series of cars would continue to set records for speed and endurance for years to come. It was no surprise they became popular in racing. At the time, there was no bigger test of speed and endurance than the legendary 24-hour race at Le Mans. Jaguar decided to capitalize on this and produced a purpose-built racing car known as the XK120C, also known as the C-Type. In either case, the C stood for competition. It was based on XK120 mechanicals, but had a tubular steel space frame and a lightweight aluminum body. The C-Type won its first attempt at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in 1951. In 1953, C-Types placed first, second, and fourth at Le Mans. In 1954, the C-Type was replaced by the D-Type. Although it was mechanically similar to its predecessor, the D-Type design was revolutionary. The body structure was a monocoque, meaning that most of its strength came from the shape of its aluminum skin, which was designed in a wind tunnel. The technology used in its construction was borrowed from the aviation industry. In fact, the chief designer worked for the Bristol Aeroplane Company during the war. When the new D-Type arrived at Le Mans in 1954, the showdown with Ferrari was known as brute force versus science. The big Ferrari with its 4.9-liter V12 had more power and quicker acceleration, but the lightweight Jag with space-age construction and aerodynamic shape handled better and was 12 miles per hour faster on the long Mulsanne straight. In the end, brute force won out. The D-Type lost valuable time with fuel delivery problems, but was able to finish in second place less than a lap behind the winning Ferrari. The next closest competitor was 19 laps back. After the race, Jaguar was able to fix the problems, and the D-Type won at Le Mans in 1955 and again in 1956. Jaguar decided to retire from racing after the 1956 season, but five privately owned D-Types entered the 1957 24-hour of Le Mans, and they finished first, second, third, fourth, and sixth. It was the best year ever for the D-Type, and also its last. Rule changes for the 1958 season limited engine size, ending the dominance of the 3.8-liter XK engine. Meanwhile, back at the factory, Jaguar had lots of leftover parts for cars they no longer wanted to build. There was a lot of money tied up in stuff they weren't using, but Sir William Lyons had an idea how to recover this investment. If the remaining D-Types were converted to road-going specification, they could probably sell them to the crazy Americans. A few comforts were added, like a second seat and a passenger door, and the large vertical tail fin was removed. There were also a few concessions to the safety regulations of the day, like a larger windscreen, windscreen wipers, bumpers, and taillights. It met the minimum requirements of a street-legal car. But make no mistake, it was still a serious racing car that was just masquerading as a street car. Thus, the D-Type became the XK Super Sport, better known as the XKSS. Some call it the world's first supercar. There were enough parts to build 25 of them. Unfortunately, a fire broke out at the Browns Lane factory, destroying nine of these very special cars. The remaining 16 were sold, most of them to crazy Americans. One such American was the legendary badass and occasional movie actor Steve McQueen. He called it the Green Rat. With the D-type program finished, the defunct racing department had nothing left to do, so they were given a new assignment: to adapt the advanced design of the D-type for a new production road car to replace the aging XK120, 140, 150 platform. The result was the E-type. It had the space-age structural design and performance from the D-type in a more refined and comfortable package. When it was introduced in early 1961, it was an instant sensation. The legendary Enzo Ferrari, who seldom had nice things to say, took one look and proclaimed the E-Type the most beautiful car ever made. To this day, it remains not only the quintessential Jaguar, but also one of the most recognizable and iconic sports cars on the planet. Many publications include the E-Type in their lists of the most beautiful cars of all time. And there's an E-Type in the permanent collection of New York's Museum of Modern Art. So this brings us back to the comparisons. Allow me first to compare the E-Type with a supermodel. Long and lean, with graceful curves in all the right places. Athletic and muscular, but with a quiet, gentle side. A natural beauty, at ease in any crowd. In contrast, the XKSS is the supermodel's lesser-known cousin, the porn star. Ample curves and exaggerated features. Pure, unfiltered sex appeal. An unforgettable way to spend a Saturday afternoon, but you probably don't want to bring her home to meet your parents. And if you ride her too long, she will wear you out, and maybe even hurt you a little bit. It would probably be worth it. In March of this year, Jaguar announced that the new Classic Division will be reproducing the 9 copies of the XKSS that were lost in the 1957 fire at Browns Lane. So if you're in the market for a brand new, hand-built, original supercar, and you just happen to have $1.4 million burning a hole in your pocket, well, you're out of luck because all 9 of them sold out immediately. You'll just have to save a few million more dollars and settle for one of the 16 used ones. Make that one of 15 because Steve McQueen's car is at the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles and they don't want to sell it. On the other hand, for what you'd spend on a decent used XKSS, you could buy a couple of really nice E-types and a big garage to keep them in, and you still have enough left over to maintain them for the rest of your life. Or you could just buy yourself an ordinary Jag and maybe a nice vintage Land Rover and retire on the rest. It's a tough choice. What would you do?
Welcome back to the Sinister Year Podcast. This is show number 41 for August 2016. And now we have a very special guest all the way from California, Emily Miller. Say hi, Emily.
Hi, guys. And ladies, listening?
I appreciate you joining us, and I know you're busy and have a lot of work going on, which is all about the Rebel Rally, and I'll read a little bit about the Rebel Rally, and then we'll start talking about it, if that's okay with you.
Sounds great.
So the Rebel Rally is the first woman's off-road navigation rally raid in the United States. Blending the love of driving with the ultimate challenge of precise navigation, the Rebel tests your skills over 7 days of competition. It's not a race for speed, but a unique and demanding event based on the elements of headings, hidden checkpoints, time, and distance using maps, compass, and road book. My first question, Emily, for you is it Rebel or Rebel?
It is Rebel. And where I got the name is the definition of the word Rebel. As a verb, is to defy convention, and Belle is a beautiful woman. So it really means a beautiful woman who defies convention.
Or as I would say, hot ass kickers.
Yes, agreed. And they are. We are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen some of the what you're doing, and it's very interesting. How did it start? You're the founder, right? You started the rally?
Yes, I started it. I felt like that there was a real lack of opportunities specifically for women, or that encouraged women to get more involved in off-road. And off-road obviously takes on a lot of different definitions, whether it's, you know, not necessarily off-road racing, but driving off-road, overlanding, or racing off-road, et cetera. And so I really wanted to provide a platform for women to shine, but to also feel that it's something for them. And I basically kind of took a look at things, been an off-road racer and a longtime driving coach and also an event producer and own a sports marketing production company. And it really was a goal to kind of bring some of the elements that I loved together into like one platform. But I had also found that women really tend to take a back seat, so to say, to kind of the guys when we're out there. I saw it in coaching. You'd have a class and you might have, you know, out of 24, 25 guys, you might have one or two women show up. They tended to be a little bit more timid, but they were great at being coached. They were great drivers, great navigators. And I really saw them grow, et cetera, but they kind of needed their own space because they tended to learn on a little different pace and with a little different style. And so as I started coaching more women and doing a couple of events for women, I found that they really needed kind of their own event. You know, it's been interesting. I've been accused of being sexist for doing this. But if we started a rally that was just open, we would probably find the same pattern, that you would have a lot of men sign up and maybe one team of women or one or two teams at the most. Because I think the intimidation factor. So this is really built for women and women's kind of temperament and tastes, or maybe it's my temperament and taste. But there you have it.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's about time for a no dudes allowed event.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, yeah. And you've heard of the Texas Rovers did in their SCAR rally, did the Barbara Toy tribute run. I think you're aware of that, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Actually, that's how we heard about you, by the way, and your rally was thanks to them. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I like the idea of more events for women to because I think you're right. I think there's the intimidation thing, and also the women just sort of, you know, just sit in the back seat, if you will, and let the men do the thing because that's just what they're used to. So something that can draw the women into the front seat and get them active and grow the community.
Build self-esteem and also show the guys that, hey, the ladies can do it too. And yeah, you don't have to let them take the back seat either.
They don't. And you know, it's basically an event I think that's going to help really kick open the door. And I wanted it to build an event that where women can really see this as a badge of honor. You know, people asked me, hey, why don't you just stick your toe in and do this for, let's say, you know, a 3-day version. If we did a 3-day version, it really wouldn't. You know, anybody can do anything for 3 days. You can fake it pretty well for 3 days, but you know, 7, 8, 9 days, you really start learning about yourself. You really have a chance to sharpen your skills, or you know, employ the skills that you already have and grow and learn a lot more about yourself, especially when you're hungry, dehydrated, tired, and
sleep
probably
deprived.
Maybe want to, you know, smack your teammate. So, yeah.
Indeed. So this is the first one in the United States, and it's going to take place October 13th through the 26th. Do I have the dates right?
Correct.
Well, I remember dates. I was surprised.
That's impressive.
Thank you.
Where?
Well, actually, the technical inspection and verification is in Lake Tahoe at a great old estate called Valhalla in South Lake Tahoe. Then we transfer out into the Nevada desert, and we will then do 7 days off-road with some pavement transit sections, and then we will finish kind of along the California-Mexico border. Then we, and that's our finish line. The course is confidential, so the ladies, I think, will have a nice surprise when they get there, but it does go through Nevada and California fairly equally. And then we have our final awards gala in Del Mar, California, at the famous old Del Mar racetrack, horse racing track.
Let's back up a second here. You say that the check-in and the event begins at Valhalla. Does that mean if your vehicle fails tech, it's given a Viking funeral?
Funeral pyre.
Potentially, yes.
Excellent.
It's up to the competitors, but yeah.
So this one takes There's been rallies before this, and this is the first one in the U.S. Where did the previous ones take place, and what was
Actually, there are several. You know, I was a competitor and involved in, you know, intimately in helping women do the rally Aisha de Gazelle in Morocco, and so that is a different format of a rally. It's a women's rally. It's incredible. It's been around for 25 years, but it's a straight line. It's you take a heading with a compass. And you drive the shortest distance possible, which is not what this rally is about. But another, it's a great women's event, and that's in Morocco,
right.
In the spring. Then there's also there's one in South America called the Rose de Sable, and there's the Aventura Cup, which is several locations, including Mongolia, Oman, and I believe that they are potentially starting one. I think in Bolivia. Yes, there are, and then there are some other events like She Mud. It's a great woman, Nurin Red, which is more of an extreme 4x4 event in Malaysia. She's doing a great job with that. So there are some great women's events, but you know, not everybody is in the position to take on an event out of the country because it takes a long period of time. You know, the travel time, getting a vehicle or preparing your vehicle, getting it there, and also the expense of doing the overseas rallies. I encourage all women that they should do them. You know, it's an incredible experience. But, you know, at the end of the day, America, we have some of the most amazing desert and off-road landscape in the world. And, you know, I was just back out on the course, on the route this past week. You know, I've been running it. And I am always just amazed at the diversity and the magnitude of our terrain. It's really just incredible. So to be able to offer that to women, either that are in the U.S. who don't necessarily have the means or the time or the desire to go overseas, or to women who have who want to come and discover and explore America.
How heavily modified are you talking about some of these vehicles being here in the for the event here in the U.S.?
Not. A real goal of ours has been to make it about stock vehicles and a vehicle that you can afford. And the message is that the vehicle in your driveway is much more capable than you think. So it's not for race cars. In fact, tube chassis vehicles are not allowed. It is for manufactured vehicles, but you can have modifications. However, at this point in time, this year, you have to keep your stock pivot points for your suspension and your tire size is limited to 35s. And it has to be plated and street legal. So, and then people who have questions, you know, just have to get into, you know, our tech inspection crew.
So Dave is upset because he's a big...
Why is he upset?
Well, he likes to modify his trucks and put lifts on them. And,
actually, what she's saying sounds great.
Oh.
Actually, she's not being all that restrictive because if you can't get it done with 35-inch tires, you really need to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, this is the type of rally that, you know, 35s aren't going to help you. You know, I mean, you're not going to be – somebody can win this rally in a stock Land Rover or stock Jeep with good off-road tires. Mm-hmm. It is not the type of rally that – you know, because it's not for speed. There's some difficult and demanding terrain. But, you know, I designed this course because I really want it to be a fun course to drive. You know, I want those drivers to feel like, wow, I never want to – job, never want to turn my cell phone on again. I just want to drive road. So, the rally is designed to start out easier and get harder, and the terrain does get more challenging, but it's definitely doable by people of, you know, all skills. And there's an option to try what checkpoints before based on your driving skill. So, I think modifications. I also think it's an incredible test of a driver to successfully pilot a very stock vehicle off-road in competition. So I think We have Jeeps and various vehicles that do have lifts. We have a couple that do have 35-inch tall tires. It's primarily, up to about 33s that we're seeing. Right now, we do have, for example, the lineup of vehicles. Right now, we have 4 Land Rovers registered. We have, Tacomas, Wranglers, pickups. And then the interesting thing is we have a crossover class. And talk about, you can't lift. You really can't lift a crossover.
Right.
And the crossover class, we have a lot of very interesting interest. Not a lot, but we have some very interesting entries into the crossover class. Right now we have a Porsche Cayenne, a Honda Ridgeline, which actually fits into that class because it's unibody and does not have low range. And we have...
Translation, it's not a real truck.
I'll tell you what, I test drove it. It drove really well, but it felt like a car.
Exactly.
But it did have good capability with good tires on it. We had a set of Nitto tires, set of Terra Grapplers on it, and it did quite well. We also have, we have the Jaguar F-Pace, the new F-Pace entered.
Wow.
Crossover, yes. Test drove that, and we were lightweight, nimble, power. Same thing. Put a good set of off-road tires on it and drive it smart.
Grace, space, and pace.
good way to put it.
Harold's our Jaguar consultant. He's a big Jaguar fan. But not a fan of the F-Pace.
No, I think that Jag has no business building SUVs.
Yeah, well, their F-Type Jaguars are incredible cars right now. So I just have to say, I was happily surprised with the vehicle and the capability. So we'll see how that does. It's a really cool team that's piloting that. But then again, they're all cool teams. I mean, great group of ladies.
So what exact Land Rovers are involved? Since this being a Land Rover podcast, we are curious about the Land Rovers that are.
Yeah. Well, right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4 LR4s. Right now we don't have any Range Rovers entered. I'm hoping to see an Evoque. An Evoque would do really well in the crossover class.
No ladies willing to bring the big arms and bring a series truck?
honestly, I would love to see, a classic Defender. But right now it's all LR4s. So to all Land Rover people listening, it's time to get some Land Rover variety into the mix.
Yeah, I've already texted my wife and told her she needs to make sure she listens to this episode so I can go buy her a Defender and start putting it together.
Dude, let's just put together your Series 3. I want to see her kick ass in that.
Oh, no, that's gone.
Oh, you sold it?
Yeah.
You keep selling all the cool stuff, Dave.
Don't sell the cool stuff.
Well, I had a half of a cool truck. And
well, it would have been cool in the hands of your wife. Let's just put it that way.
Well, yeah.
Well, I could. We
and,
could talk
and
about
you
the
sold
109.
The red truck out from underneath her too, Dave. What the heck?
Yeah, what the heck, Dave?
So Emily,
she's been driving my Disco too, Emily.
Let's all gang up on Dave.
She's been driving my Disco too, Emily. So
okay, good.
It's all good.
Well, it's. The Hohen family of Land Rover, Jaguar, and Carlsbad, California, Johanna and Karen Hohen are both piloting LR4s and have great navigators. And another Hohen Land Rover, although not part of the Hohen team, is actually fielded as well. And actually, Hohen Adventures, which is kind of the adventure portion of Hohen Land Rover, they are actually a presenting sponsor and fielding 6 teams. So it's and Johanna and Karen both have experience over in Morocco, so I think they'll have a good rally.
I think I made a mistake, and see if I clarify this. So the Rebel Rally is the first one ever anywhere, and this is just kind of along the lines of the other rallies you talked about that have been around the world. So this is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, except I would say that in terms of the format, it's a very different format. So I think what it shares similarity-wise is that it's multiple days and it's for women, and promotes speed kind of precision over speed. Right. And so I'd say there are a lot of rallies like that, whether it's male, female, et cetera.
As slow as possible, as fast as necessary.
Absolutely. And we do have time, speed, distance sections within this event. We have multiple days with TSDs. And so they have to maintain an average speed and get to their arrival time or, checkpoint and nail it within seconds. Doesn't necessarily mean for fast speed, but it means for driving accuracy, interpreting your road book really carefully. And then also what we've done is, I think what's different about ours is I wanted to create something where women who did not have a lot of experience could compete on the same playing field with women who have a lot of experience. And I think it's going to surprise everyone. We have green, blue, and black. The skier in me pulled a little bit from that world. And we have green, blue, and black checkpoints. And it's a measure of navigation difficulty and precision in plotting your checkpoints, et cetera. But, your green checkpoints, you can see clearly they're marked. The blue checkpoints are marked but not as visible. And then the black checkpoints have no marking. So you have a tracker. You have two trackers on you. You have a handheld tracker. And when you believe you're at the checkpoint, you have to signal your tracker. Sounds easy, but when you're dealing with plotting on 50, 100, and 200,000 scale maps, you have to nail your accuracy within a bullseye. And, the where you are within the bullseye is going to determine your score. And I think that's really different. I saw with some of the gazelles who are used to doing straight line and having a large red flag, found it really difficult to have to nail a checkpoint that they can't see. But what I love about it is it forces you to really know how to navigate and really know how to accurately tell where you are within 100 feet. And that is going to be a really good point. That's, the winner of the rally is going to be someone who's a good driver and a navigator who is exceptional. But you can still do the rally, have a great time, challenge your skills without being, extremely skilled at either. So it's been a challenge. We've been working on this course for, actively working on it for about 15 months, I would say, and really looking at how to put this together over the course of about 3 years.
Do you see this being an annual event?
That's what we're pushing for.
Excellent.
Generally in the same place, or you think about moving around the country?
It will not be the exact same course, but it will be in the West. It will be in the West.
Right.
So, the hardest part is, as you can imagine, putting together a 1,200-mile long course with alternate routes ready to go and approved if need be because of weather is definitely a land management challenge. So being able to make this happen has been awesome, but there are definitely certain states where it's more doable and it makes more of an exciting, challenging course. So the course at this time, at least in the form of the Rebel Rally as a 7-day off-road driving event, will stay in the West.
I think it would pretty much have to, given the lead time that you're talking about. In order to be ready for next year's event, you're sort of pre-scouting this year.
Oh, yes. Already pre-scouting. Yeah.
back to the some of the technical side of it, if I may ask, I had a question that I thought of. Is there winching involved? What about repairs of the vehicle? So, like, are the contestants going to be doing any, you know, do they have to winch, or is winching necessary? Is that something they should anticipate? What happens if the vehicle breaks down? Do they need to be prepared to repair their own vehicle?
They do. So it is not a winching competition, and winching does not really factor into it. They should not have to. You know, there's nothing that they should have to do more than use a set of max tracks and a shovel, or help from a competitor with a toe strap. That shouldn't get them out of whatever situation they're in. Now, when it comes to mechanical issues on course, they need to repair the vehicle themselves. If they can't, they can have help from a competitor. If all else fails, we do have mechanical support on the course, but it does result in a penalty. When they come back at night, we have a space and an area. We have impound. Competitors have a 2-hour window. If their car needs to be fixed, they have a 2-hour window that does not incur a penalty. There is a space and tools, welder, et cetera, where they can work on the car themselves. However, if they want mechanical support and help, we do have mechanics on site for the teams. Same thing, though. It's a 2-hour window.
Right. Well, that's good. So there is that aspect to the challenge of being able to work on your own vehicle and understand it.
Yeah, but if people aren't, you know, super well-versed, we want to allow women to work on their own car if need be, and give them that space. But if they don't know how, they have help. But they have to be an integral part in the repair. They have to be able to provide a fairly good diagnosis. The service manager has to repeat the issue. In translation, what it means is you can't just walk in at night, hand over your vehicle and say, hey, give it a look over and, you know, get me running again.
Have it polished up and ready to go in the morning. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, crew chief. Not that. So,
right.
And you know, it's we really want to provide a platform that encourages women to get to know their vehicles right. better.
So this is a tremendous opportunity for them to learn how to do service as well.
Yes. And now, we don't expect people to do that to sign up, but we women, you know, you're going to have to change your own tire. You're going to have to check your fluids.
That should be a requirement for a driver's license anyway.
Yes.
Very true. Very true.
That and reading a map, all the things that you require.
Yeah, it's amazing.
She's talking about full-blown orienteering.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that either.
More people get lost on their way to training. When we have a training event, people get lost all the time because they said, my GPS wasn't right. It's like, that's the one time you get to fail that test. And then after that, you shouldn't fail that test anymore.
So how many people do you have registered currently?
Well, you know, that is a great question. I've been trying not to focus on that. I believe we have about in the neighborhood of 48 teams.
Wow,
that's a lot.
Way more than I anticipated. I don't know why, but I don't know what I expected, but that seems a lot to me.
I'm just trying to figure the magnitude of the event and managing that many is a challenge for her.
Well, that has to be huge because I'm thinking about the guys that did the Vermont Overland Trophy.
Yeah.
And they capped it at 25.
Yeah, right. Yeah, is there a cap, Emily?
Yeah, there sure is. There's a cap of 60.
Okay.
We've had just the cutoff date for registration is September 23rd. And what I've been trying to do, because, you know, I'm out with my course director is a guy named Jimmy Lewis, who was he's actually the first American to podium the Dakar, did it on a motorcycle, and actually is a privateer. And, you know, the guy is all-time great. And so we've been out running the course a ton and working on the course. And my goal is that regardless of how many competitors we have, if we had 3, 30, or 60, it's just got to be an
a great special event with a very fair competition. So that's where my brain has been lately, is making sure that challenge is really solid. One thing that people should know is that if you do sign up, we do have an online navigation course, and we just did a navigation on-site training this past week. And we found that the girls who did the online navigation course, and they really studied it. It comes with practice maps and a practice road book, video and slides. They did really well in the navigation training. So that's something that comes with registration.
I was jealous. I wanted to do the training, but then I realized you had to be a competitor. So.
We can make exceptions.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It looked interesting. I was on the website, and I was poking around, and I'm like, oh, look, they're online. Oh, that'd be really cool to learn. Yeah, no.
Well, you shouldn't let the requirement to be a girl stand in your way, John.
No, here we go. Here we go.
He did have a Freelander.
You stepped into that one.
I told you this is a Freelander bashing free zone.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Freelanders welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, if you're looking to have a bonfire, sort of a Burning Man sort of thing, I can ship you a Freelander.
That would be my old Freelander. My Freelander that he ended up with.
Yeah, well, it was much better before the chimney fell on it.
More useful. So along the lines of the online navigation, I also saw on the website you're going to be doing some live tracking in the website. Webcasting.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little more info about what those are?
Yeah, so every night we will have a live webcast at 8 p.m. From the base camp.
8 p.m.
It will include interviews.
Pacific time?
You know, highlights. Pacific time, yes. And then we do have live tracking on the vehicles. We have we're trying to keep our scoring as real time as possible. So when someone clicks off a checkpoint, it should populate within 5 minutes of capturing the checkpoint. And then our TSD sections are updated as fast as possible that scoring can get them out. You know, it's really important to us because this is not really a spectator event that people can watch online.
Right.
So, yeah, and then social, we'll have regular social updates that are going out multiple times a day, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I just started to follow your Instagram account in addition to the Twitter account, by the way. I did that.
All right. Hey, thank you.
And all that for the listeners, all that is on their website. So if you want to know more about the rally and you want to know more about the things you just talked about as far as tracking and watching and following the social media, it's rebelrally.com.
Yes.
And we'll provide links in the show notes.
As always, links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I think one thing I really want to see is, you know, I really would love to see some variety in the Land Rover, Range Rover segment. We're really excited to have the four LR4s. But like I said, you know, that Evoque, the Evoque is a great winning. It's definitely capable of a win, especially with the traction control systems on the Evoque. Well, on all the Land Rovers, they're so dialed. And the ground clearance is really good on that vehicle, along with the approach and departure angles. So I just think that would be a really capable vehicle.
If I had the cash, I'd sponsor someone to take an Evoque convertible, because that'd be cool to see.
Oh.
I know someone that is awaiting delivery.
Oh, yeah? There you go.
I believe it's even that...
In time?
I think it's even that G4 Orange.
Oh, nice.
Right on.
Ooh.
And she wheels with us.
All right.
Well, she needs to break it in.
She has a Range Rover Sport that she...
She could take the Sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that it would be hard to talk her into this at all.
There you go.
So the one question we haven't addressed yet, and we've talked about a lot of things with the event, but what's the cost?
The cost is it's a $5,500 per person. So there's a two-person team. And that's for entry. It's past the early registration deadline, so it's $11,000 a team. But what it includes your hotel room at the start, your hotel room at the finish. It includes all your meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, water, all your infrastructure at base camp, including showers, toilets, etc. and includes your mechanics as well as then all your, you know, the infrastructure of the event.
So it's all inclusive then?
It's all inclusive except for your fuel and except for your tracking equipment, because you're really responsible for taking care of that tracking equipment. There's a $550 fee for tracking equipment, so it's split between two people. But that includes a vehicle-mounted tracker, a handheld tracker, and a satellite phone for emergency. Fuel is all vehicle-dependent, assume it runs, you know, it's going to run about $400 in the $400 range.
So we're looking about $12,000 for the team.
Yes.
In addition to a vehicle, and vehicle's also not included.
Vehicle is not included, no. But, you know, for people who do want to do the event, Barlow's out of Arizona actually has rental vehicles that are fully prepped with TerraTrips, MaxTrax, you know, toe straps, et cetera, great tires, new vehicles. You can look up barlows.us. And, you know, really reasonable prices and very well-prepped vehicles. So it's about 10 days of cost coverage for quite the adventure. Indeed. And then it also includes at the end, it's a black tie optional gala. We say black tie optional, but it's really wear whatever makes you feel like $1 million, but going to, you know, wash up all the dirt, and then we are going to celebrate with a great award ceremony and dinner.
I recommend the contestants wear what they had right off the course without showering. Just get up there. That's the way to do it.
There might be some that come in that way. So, yeah.
Yeah, if you consider not everybody's going to finish at the same time.
That's true. True. Good point. Good point. Yeah, and then friends and family are invited to those events.
Friends and family can come to those events as well as sponsors. And it is, you know, it's such a spectacular setting. You know, it's an iconic location. It's right on the beach. It's a beautiful old vintage racetrack that's still live and running. And so, you know, we start in a historic location in Lake Tahoe, and we end in a historic location in San Diego. So, definitely cover a lot of distance. So I guess the question is, are you guys coming?
Well, I have a penis.
You can observe, Harold. You can observe.
I said, Harold, I'm pretty sure that I can find dresses that fit both of us.
All right.
I'm sure you could. Yeah. You would be the first guy who's asked to wear a skirt and join us. So,
hey, I mean, this looks like
of course, around here we call them kilts, but...
That's true.
Yes, you could wear a kilt. You know, I'm expecting to see at least someone to wear a kilt at the final awards gala.
And indeed, they should. Indeed, they should. Yes, we're all jealous. I mean, when this whole thing started hearing about the rally, we're just jealous to begin with. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It does. Neat skills, and
of course, you know. if your support staff, your technicians and such, are allowed to be male, I might consider volunteering next year.
Ooh. Yes, they're allowed to be male, and I will take your sign up right now. And
we have it recorded. He said he would do it.
Yep.
I said I'd be willing to. Doesn't mean I'm committed.
Emily, I'm taking it as a commitment.
But I would seriously consider it. If nothing else, it's an opportunity to visit my wife, who's stationed in California. So.
That's right. Indeed, yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to actually sign her up if I could get a vehicle together and find her a partner.
You navigate her, yeah.
I think I could think of somebody to be a partner. We have a lot of women right now that are still looking for teammates, and some that are registered for the event. So... You know, for people who are listening, definitely reach out, contact us. There's also Gem Off-Road, which is gemoffroad.com. That's a great site it's a women's site. It has a forum section, and there's definitely a place there where women are kind of looking for teammates and connecting. So,
Repeat that website again, please.
It's Gem Off-Road, gemoffroad.com. That's not our site, but it's a site of Charlene Bauer, who's also a competitor, and it's been a great place where, in fact, I think about 8 women have connected online and formed about 4 teams off that website. And we just trained them, and it's amazing. You know, you don't have to in something like this, the key is that you have similar goals. You don't have to be best of friends. I think you have to, you need a sense of adventure and glass half full attitude, and then have similar goals. Like if you want to win, you know, and, or do you want to go have fun and get to base camp for the first shower? You know, having shared goals, really helps a team. But it's definitely, available that there are women who are definitely looking.
So there is a winner. What does the winner get? Or team, winning team, excuse me.
Okay. So the winning teams win free entry into next year's rally. So they don't win cash, but they definitely...
Well, they win the equivalent of $12,000, apparently.
Correct. And they also get a very nice Suunto watch, and then some additional prizes that we're just not quite announcing yet.
Sure.
And one hell of a trophy, and bragging rights.
Bragging rights are important.
Bragging rights are important. And then also we have a Team Spirit Award. And the Team Spirit Award is an award that's voted on by the competitors and a group of the organizers that really is about the team that has the best, that shows the best spirit on course and really embodies, you know, what we believe as not just being a competitor, but, you know, how to compete. It doesn't mean you have to throw your event, you know, to help someone else. But definitely there will be a Team Spirit Award, and that team wins $5,000 to the charity of their choice. And that will be named at the gala. And then there's also the Bone Stock Award, and the Bone Stock Award is the vehicle with a bone stock designation, meaning the only modifications are wheels and tires. And that bone stock designation just wins a special award, a special trophy, but it goes not only to the team, it also goes to the manufacturer. So we'll be sending that trophy on to the manufacturer of the vehicle that they drove.
Nice.
Yeah, bone stock is a really, from my mentor in driving, bone stock is really important to us, showing really the capability of an OEM vehicle.
And a properly trained driver.
And yes, exactly. Yeah, bone stock designation is really a driver's award in my book. We are also looking at creating some special awards for, you know, top navigator, top, you know, kind of navigator / driving skills and some other awards, kind of Tour de France style. You don't necessarily have to win the rally to get special recognition.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little more about you. How did you get into off-roading, orienteering, overlanding, whatever it is you want to call it?
Oh. Well, you know, from an adventure standpoint, I was always into the outdoors. You know, I moved to California from Colorado, from Crested Butte, Colorado, which is where my home is, and really special place. So I've always been into, you know, skiing, mountain biking, snowboarding, etc. But it was very interesting. I was sitting in the National Automobile Museum one day. I own a sports marketing business. And I was in this board meeting, and a guy that I didn't know, and I did not know off-road. I've always loved to drive. I've always loved automotive since I was a kid, sitting next to the fireplace with my dad, reading all the automobile magazines and wondering why there were no women who were doing car reviews. But I was sitting there, and this guy you know, I call him Yoda because he looks like Yoda, and he's kind of my Yoda in driving. Got in touch with me, and we started working on some projects. He taught me how to four-wheel and drive off-road, and then asked me to race for his race team. And his name is Rod Hall. And Rod is getting ready to turn 80 years old.
I absolutely get the Yoda reference with Rod Hall.
Okay. okay. So it, yeah. So if you know Rod, yeah, he is Yoda. He is the most winning racer in the history of Baja. He's won the Baja 518 times and the Baja 1023 times in his class. He's the only one to race all the Baja 1000s. He, had the longest string of unbroken race wins at 35 race wins. He's an amazing human, amazing individual. He's tough. He expects a lot out of you. And he was an excellent coach and still a great, he was from a business partner to mentor, coach. I call him my dirt dad. That's how I got into it. And it was interesting. And this is something that I've wanted to pass along to women. And I'm doing this rally somewhat in a tribute to Rod. He said to me, when he told me that he wanted me to race for him, I was kind of dumbfounded and really didn't get it. He said, hey, you know, I don't come from this. He said, you know, I can teach you how to drive a car and I can teach you how to race, but I can't teach you how to be, you know, a team player, hard worker, never give up, but I can teach you how to drive. And he goes, but you're going to have to learn how to win. And he was such a great coach. And I think it's very inspiring to women to think, hey, you don't have to grow up, you know, in a racing family. You don't have to grow up in a driving family. If you have the desire, you can go out and get trained and get coached and build your skill set and go out and do it. And I think that that's something that's really important in this rally, is that we want women to build their confidence and their competence. You know, with competence, being really good at what you do brings a level of confidence that is grounded in your skill. And that is something we really want to reinforce. And that's something that Rod Hall gave to me. So that's how I got in this.
Those are just good life skills to begin with, period.
Yeah, they sure are. Life, work, you know, relationships, everything.
Okay, so the other big question we need to know about you is, what are you driving?
What am I driving? Okay, right now I am driving a BMW X5.
All right. Hey, it's all technology that was stolen from Land Rover.
And somehow got wrong at the same time.
Well, the Germans
steal the technology from a vehicle with a rated 20-inch wading depth, and somehow the vehicle, if you get the water above the black part of the tire, it's now considered submerged and voids the warranty.
Anyway.
Well, 5 inches wading depth on an X5 compared to the 20 from which they stole the technology.
Yes.
Oh.
Anyway.
BMW has been really supportive, and they've loaned this vehicle, so I guess I don't have to worry about it for long
if they listen to me, but oh well.
So I'm driving that right now, and I'm actually driving the 50i, which is a twin-turbo V8, so it has a lot of power. Some off-road tires on and a smaller rim. Took off the 19s, put on 18s, and an off-road tire. It's got a full set of Max Tracks on top. And I've been running the course in that to check how the crossovers are going to do.
Right.
But I also, we have a new van, and we have a four-wheel drive sprinter van with low range.
Right on.
That's cool.
That's cool.
We like that.
Badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have a good old Chevy Tahoe and that we've kept in the family, that everybody in the family seems to take a turn with.
Sure.
Well, it's a good beater to learn on.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I have to tell you, if we walked out the door today and we had any amount of money to buy a vehicle – my husband and I would have a tough time deciding I have to tell you, the full-size Range Rover in sand dunes handles, I love driving sand dunes. It's my favorite. And I love driving them in powerful yet stock vehicles. And that Range Rover is amazing. But We love the LR4 because my husband's really tall and I'm about 5 feet tall, but we love the capability of it. It has a ton of room, headspace. We've tested one quite a bit and we just think it's an all around great vehicle for what we need, you know, living the lifestyle we live, which is on road, off road, and with all the different sports we do.
Sure. It's a good vehicle.
But I have to say, if I could, and I could have my, I would have a Defender 90.
Right.
And give me just about any year. I just love them.
We can make that happen.
Okay, let's make it happen.
You're back in our good graces, Emily. Sorry about the BMW.
That's easy to come by.
I'm going to just give props. People don't think that car can do what it does, but it does it. It's done a great job and been fun to drive.
Well,
I love so many cars. You know, it's tough to pick.
What car did you have that you lost that you wish you could get back?
Oh my gosh. An old, an Audi coupe.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. An old Audi, coupe. Gosh, it was just such an incredible car.
Quattro, I'm assuming.
It was the Quattro coupe, and that is, it's just an incredible car, and that was really special. I was I've had 6 Audis in my life, and they've been fun to drive.
Audis used to positively kick ass in the rally before everybody else discovered, you know what, we should build cars like this.
Yeah, Michel Mouton was my idol.
Oh, there's a name
16.
I haven't heard in a couple decades.
Wow, yeah. When I was, I guess I was 16 when she was running Pikes Peak. And we were big Audi fans. And I'll tell you that seeing what she did with that car and the way she danced with the car just was incredible.
Oh, she was showing the boys how it's done, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess when she pulled up, they just laughed at her until it was a race for second place.
Absolutely. Yeah. Laugh all you want. We'll see you at the end.
Yep.
So what rallies have you participated in and been a contestant? Have you participated in the Gazelles or any other rallies?
I was actually, several. And probably one of my favorites was actually when the Vegas Torino was actually a 3-day rally. That was one of my favorites, but I also had a really good race. So, but yeah, I did participate in the Gazelle and actually I was, we were the only Americans and I had heard about it because I had at the time I was racing for this General Motors factory team for Rod and my goal was to go over and do the FIA World Championships of cross country rally, which was all primarily in Africa, but that was before Arab Spring. And so, I had a family member in Angola who had seen the Gazelle and said, "Hey, you need to do this." And that was, back in 2008. And so I went and did the 2009 edition and, I did it 2009, 10, and 11. After that, then worked to help women go compete in it. And it was really special. I thought it was going to be easy because it wasn't about speed and it was all women. I can't even believe I'm going to say this, but I thought, okay, it's going to be easy. It's all women. And it was the first time I hadn't been on the podium and it was really interesting because, competing against women using their brain and not testosterone and not for speed is extremely challenging. And it was also all in French and myself and one of my best friends, Wendy Fisher, we went over and did it. And, no one spoke English. And we kind of found that helping get people unstuck, was a way to build friendships. So, I really fell in love with it and I went back multiple times and then helped. In fact, the last year that we worked on it last year, the year before we had 10 American teams, compete, including the Hoens. In the Land Rover and the Range Rover. So that was really, really fun.
Not mistaken, in the last couple months, Jeff Aronson had an article on the two of you doing that Gazelle run, or is that last year in Rover's magazine?
Oh, that was on Johanna and Susanna. And that was last year. And that was actually a beautiful, really well-written piece.
Right. Yeah, that was.
That's Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just been a great supporter, and really encouraging, I think, to the ladies participating in this.
Indeed. Yes. Well, thanks to him that I got in contact with you guys. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
He's a frequent contributor to the podcast, so.
Awesome. Yeah, good guy, great writer. Yeah, that was a really great article.
Yes,
so now people can just come do the Rebel in their own backyard.
That's right. Is Jeff going out to the Rebel? Is he going to come out and do any
coverage?
Thank you.
We don't have a confirmation yet.
All right, we're trying to encourage Jeff to go out to and cover it for us.
Didn't he recently do a theatrical presentation where he was dressed up as a lady? He could maybe fit into this.
Yeah, you may want to make sure that you review all those applicants.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's been so supportive. So
it's too funny.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Terry Ann Wakeman? She's a female, of course, and she's big in the Land Rover community. She has been drives a 1972 Dormobile.
She is an icon of the vintage Land Rover world.
Oh, I'm writing her name down right now as we speak.
I can send you some info. But she has a 1960 Land Rover Dormobile. I think it's a Series 2.
2A.
2A. And she's writing a book. She has a nice website, and she's writing a book called The Essential Guide to Overland Travel in the United States and Canada. And she's out your way. I think she's
in Flagstaff.
I'd say Arizona.
Okay. Oh, okay. Tyrion might be. Yeah, I think I don't know if you guys are familiar with Doug Lawyer and John Edelman from Knightsbridge Overland.
No, I'm afraid not.
Big Land Rover guys. They actually are going to be out on the support crew, and we're just waiting to see what vehicle they show up in. Yeah, there's nothing better. We have incredible photographers and videographers on this, and nothing better than a Land Rover with a beautiful backdrop.
Well, just a Land Rover period. The backdrop is secondary. Come on.
Yeah, the backdrop's optional.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I said that first.
They look great in my garage, too.
Well, one would look great in my garage. We're going to have to talk about that, getting a vintage Defender.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, I can make that happen. It depends on whether you want a North American or if you want a rest of the world edition. Depends on your interest there.
Mm.
Depends on which side of the vehicle you want to drive on.
Well, you can of course change them over. But
I would like left-hand drive.
Right. Ah, come on, don't be a girl.
What a chick!
Come on, John can do it.
That's absolutely. You know,
right-hand drive is cool, and if you're going to drive an icon, you should drive it in the way they intended it.
The way Her Majesty intended.
Oh yes.
Emily, is there anything we haven't covered that we should talk about, whether it's about you or the rally itself?
I think we've covered it quite well. Oh, you know what? Here's one thing that we didn't cover. So included in your price is we have a Michelin star chef who has been really a central figure in the farm-to-table movement. He's the real deal. His name is Drew Deckman. And he is doing the cooking. So it's not your typical, it's not an off-road race where it's tacos or nachos. We have great food.
Good food.
And yeah, good food. And I think, and also that the people who do it this year will retain the pricing and get, you know, there's a lot of, there are some really special women. You know, all the women who are doing it this year are taking a leap of faith because this hasn't been done before here. We've worked really hard to prep it, but I think what's great is they're willing to kind of take the plunge and dive right in. And there's I have so much respect for them for doing it and taking that chance and taking that risk. And that risk will be rewarded.
Indeed. This is a great event. From the sounds of it, And certainly we encourage and support your event. And having you on the show is about as far as we can get on support, but there you go.
Well, that's not true. You're going to come out next year and make rich on
very
the
possible,
event.
Very possible. Maybe, yeah, you know what? Maybe I might be able, depending on when it is, I might be able to get Harold to come out. I'll come out too. I can, yeah. I can report on it for the do a field report for the podcast.
Just something to think about, Harold, but Heidi and Linda.
Oh, there we go. You may have a team right there.
That's a thought. A
team right there.
Let me backstep here a little bit. If you want me to come out and help wrench, I would consider doing that, but only if I can teach in the process.
Teach wrenching.
Yes.
I think that's great.
Because, you know, it makes no sense for me to fix things if I can't show them how to do it for themselves.
Absolutely. No, I think that's great. And we're going to have two training events next year for women to come to that is also going to include wrenching. So I'm going to call you out on that and have you come out west.
We'll get emails going and we can have a discussion and we'll see if we can make that happen.
All right. Well, you guys, thanks so much for giving us the coverage. It's really appreciated, and we really and thanks to Jeff for connecting us, and for Jeff for doing great coverage on all the Land Rovers and the ladies out there driving them.
Absolutely, and thank you for coming on the show and talking about the rally and giving us a nice overview of what's going on with it, and hopefully you'll come back maybe when it's over and give us a little rundown of how things went.
Sounds great.
That would be
looking
cool.
Looking forward to it.
Good deal. Well, thank you, Emily, for joining us on the show today.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Now, as we move towards the end of the podcast, let's talk about some of the upcoming events. Off the top of our head, we've done no research for this, but we're doing this one off the top of our head.
Why should we break tradition now?
That's right, exactly. Woo-hoo. So I know Mars coming up. That's going to be the first weekend in October. That's going to be in Virginia. I plan to attend that. And then weekend after that in the Biltmore State in North Carolina is the Overland Expo East. I also plan to attend that and plan to take the 109. So if you're showing up to one of those events, seek me out. Say hi. I hope to have stickers by then.
Step on up and win some crap.
Oh, that too. I should take some crap with me to hand out. What else is going on,
Let's
Dave?
See. We've got the Robinsonia Trials in Pennsylvania in late October. And we have Rovers on the Rocks coming up in, I want to say it's the second weekend in November, somewhere around the 12th.
Sure. That event's at the Roush Creek, right?
That is at Roush Creek.
Okay.
And, yes, we are kind of focused on East Coast United States events, but that's the way it is. I think the National Rally.
Yeah, the Land Rover National Rally.
Colorado this year. No, it's in Moab
this
year.
It's in Moab this year.
Yeah, next year. That's coming up in mid-September, I believe. And
yeah, they've moved the dates around on that they over have, the last yeah. few years.
Right.
Yes.
And then, of course, coming back up in February will be the May Winter Romp, the Maine
Winter Romp.
President's Day weekend. So those are events coming up here in the United States, at least on this part of the coast. And there are, of course, events that go on in the UK, which, yeah we need another UK correspondent to help us out with that, right?
Or you just need to go back.
Or I need to go back. Yeah, sure. I'd love to. Who's going to sponsor me to go back to the UK and go to
the event? You are.
Okay.
You're self-sponsoring.
Self-sponsoring.
You'll be sponsored by the Center Steer podcast.
But this is why we started the Patreon. See, thank you for bringing us back around. We started the Patreon, so maybe we can get enough sponsorship of individuals and we can do some more cool things like that. Doubtful, but hey, it could happen. I'm not, I certainly
wish for.
It's worth a shot.
It's worth a shot. I encourage people to go out. And if you are someone who has a little more means and want to sponsor the show in some capacity, send me an email or tweet me. And
we will find a way to take your money.
Exactly. So I want to thank everybody for joining us on the show this month. Special thanks to Emily for talking about the Rebel Rally. And if you are interested in the rally or finding out more about it, or you want to be a contestant, that's kick-ass.
Absolutely.
We'll support you. We'll give you some support somehow. What do we give them? I don't know, $50 something. I'll come up with a couple bucks.
We'll find a way to do something.
We'll pay for a tank of gas or a diesel, whatever, to help you out.
So. Nothing cooler than the women schooling the men on how to do it.
Absolutely, that's the Rebel Rally. Also, thanks to Dave for joining us here. Dave, what do you got coming up? You're going to any events? What events are you coming up going to?
I'm planning to be at the Fall Robinsonia Trials and Rivers on the Rocks at the very least.
Are you going to Mar?
You know, I kind of thought about it, but
Think about it. Maybe you and I'll go.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Harold, what do you got coming up?
Lots and lots of work. I got a 110 to finish, so you can take a trip next year.
Yay! Good deal. Well, thanks for joining us again, Harold, and thanks for the M-word. The M-word was pretty good. I like the M-word this month. So that's the podcast for this month. I hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you for listening. Reminder to visit our website for past shows, all the and show notes, which have links to things we talked about today. You can connect with us on Facebook, Twitter. Give us your feedback on the news, topics, and even if you maybe have an idea for a guest. And now you can also directly support us by through our Patreon at www.patreon.com/centersteer. If you'd like to be a sponsor of the podcast, send me an email. We have listeners from around the world. And this last month, we got some folks from Venezuela, Australia, and Texas. And that was a big thanks to the Texas Rovers for chiming in. We have guests scheduled through the end of the year. And I'm excited to announce that Terry Ann Wakeman is releasing a new book and will be our guest in September. So that is going to come up next month. Terry Ann Wakeman, if you are not familiar with who she is, I highly recommend you Google and check her website out.
If you don't know who she is, you haven't had a Land Rover for more than a minute.
We'd love to hear from you, even if it's just a picture of your Land Rover or your Land Rover that you lust after, or maybe you have an idea for a topic. Until next time, I ask you to share the show with one fellow Land Rover fan. Thanks for listening. Wave as you pass by.
Put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the cork.